Hi everyone and warmly welcome to Mitt Liv's podcast on inclusive labour market. Here you will meet with our super special guest in a relaxed conversation about values, leadership, diversity and inclusion. And the purpose of this interview series is for you to get a chance to listen to the most value-driven CEOs and role models and understand more about their view of D&I. And this podcast is about walking the talk and for you who listen to be inspired on your D&I journey. But for you who doesn't know much about us or nothing at all, we have been around with Mitt Liv since 2008. And our vision is to work for an inclusive society and a labor market that values diversity. If you want to learn more about us, you are warm welcome to visit our homepage, mittliv.com. But today, we have the big honor, a true role model joining us for this conversation. And it's a person who knows a lot about positive mindset. And since we met Camilla, it strikes me that you have this glow around you and amazing smile that can just light everyone around you up. So warm welcome, dear Camilla Bischofberger, working for Switzerland Global Enterprises. You will tell us more about everything. Yay!
Yes. Thank you, Sophia.
Thank you. Thank you for letting us having you. And can you just tell us more about yourself and your background?
Of course. So I'm Camilla. I'm 29 years old and I live in Zurich in Switzerland. And as you mentioned, I am working for and with Switzerland Global Enterprise for the investment promotion team there. So we support companies that want to come to Switzerland. We support them on their journey. And I have a background in economics and international affairs. So the work I do aligns quite well with my background. And that's a bit about myself.
Yay, wonderful. And how long have you been there since?
I've been there for 2 years now.
Yeah. 2 years, yeah. 2 years. And what is the most fun with your job, would you say?
I think the most fun is really working with companies, with people, and seeing and hearing about the projects that they have, what they do, because they're super passionate about what they do, and they have solutions or are working on solutions of problems that I sometimes don't even know or have on the radar. So for me, that's super inspiring. And I'd like to support them on their journey and make it happen what they would like to do and get their company to a next level. So that's really cool.
That's super cool. And how do you connect the DEI to your job, or and why is it so important for you?
I think a reason why it's so important for me is a bit from my personal experiences. So I was born with a physical disability, and so I have had many experiences throughout my life where I realized that some people have no clue what a reality looks like if you have a physical disability, if you cannot walk that well. And so I've met also people that realized or made sure that everything is kind of accessible for me. And for me, that's a big difference. And I realized, hey, wow, I know about my reality. Maybe I'm a bit more sensitive when it comes to different abilities. But how much does it matter also to other people who have other abilities, experiences, background? How great must it feel if people know more about their realities, if you think outside of the box, outside of your reality? And that's why I realized the importance for the D&I topics. Mm. And so that's a bit of a spark that's in me next to what I do for work. I try to include it in my work as well. I'm the only one with a disability in my company. And so I think I'm quite a bit of an eye opener for them, because I bring topics on the table, want to have them discussed, mention it on different levels. And that's a bit how I try to bring in my ideas.
And do you feel that people around you are open for embracing your ideas?
they are open. I think some of them, it's more that they lack a certain moment where they have the realization of, oh, wow, I didn't think about that. And I try to initiate these moments as much as I can. But then also it's oftentimes a bit the question of importance, as they would say it, and then the budget and the time. So they're open, but then when it comes to actively including the IDM projects, it might be a different story.
Yeah, but also I can imagine that that hurts a bit, because this is your reality and you need the prerequisites to be able to function. And then I think the last thing you want to hear about is that it's a budget question, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's a bit oftentimes the case that they change something because of me. Mm-hmm. And it's quite draining if you're always the one who needs to put the topic on the table, mention that, hey, there is a stage, I need to go on stage, do we have a ramp? And it's always me that needs to push it, oftentimes in private as well. And so I the ideal case would be, hey, if we have had this conversation, you have had the moment that I was talking about before, you had the moment of realization, why don't you just do it from the beginning, that I don't need to call you first before I go here to check if there is a ramp, just do it, because you have no idea who will show up.
No, exactly. Yeah. And make it like a standard instead of a one-time case all the time.
Exactly, yeah.
But how has your disability shaped your life and approach this kind of challenge? And what would you say are your strengths and talents that you believe are amplified or unique because of your disability?
So I think what I've learned from a very early age on is to plan ahead. I never go anywhere, be to work, to a business trip, or even a restaurant, if I don't check the situation beforehand. And I plan different scenarios, like if I go by train and I know the train is not accessible, I need to call ahead to ask for assistance. And then I also think about, oh, if the assistance wouldn't show up, what would be my plan B? So I kind of plan in different scenarios. And that's also, I think, a strength that I have in work. So I have a plan, but I already think about, oh, I don't expect plan A to go well or to turn out well. So I already think about plan B. And I think it's the thinking ahead, being creative. Yeah. So that's something I've learned from a very early stage on. And I think I'm very good at thinking outside of the box.
And that's what we always say. We need more people think outside the box to understand the world better and embrace the future.
Yes.
So you already have a huge advantage by having that mindset. But
probably.
Yeah.
It's also a bit for me, because it really matters that I can rely on people.
Yeah.
So that is also, I think, a strength of mine, that I'm super reliable. Because for me, it really matters if the assistant shows up, if the person who says they would help me getting into a building, if they don't show up, I'm basically left there by myself. So I really value this trait a lot, to be reliable, and try to be it all the time as well.
That's wonderful. I mean, that is also what everyone talks about, the importance of trust.
Yes,
and
exactly.
To give and receive, and that you have to earn. And I think that is one of the main key things in a relationship, either it's friends or work or everything. So building trust. Yeah, and that's
absolutely agree.
Yeah. And what skills or experience do you bring to the table that you think is exceptionally valuable to an employer or team? You mentioned a few. Is there more?
One thing that I have been told to be is super resilient. So I was told that a couple of years ago, when I honestly didn't yet really know what resilience means. And people tell me a lot that I'm resilient, and it might be a strength. For me, it's a bit connected also to the negative part, because honestly, sometimes I don't have a chance or a choice. Sorry, either I'm resilient or I just let all the barriers that are in my way get to me, and then I would not be well on a mental level. So I guess I'm resilient and can work under a lot of pressure. But that's associated to the experiences I had with my disabilities, I guess. But I'm not sure if this is a very good thing or just something that comes out of the whole structural ableism that exists.
Interesting that you mentioned resilience. That is also, I mean, one of, except trust, building resilience is what all organizations are talking about now, because the rapid of change out there, and I understand it comes with a big price.
Yes.
But being resilient in an organization is probably very, very valuable, since things comes up that you don't expect, and you are always, you, Camilla, have your three scenarios already, and you are strong enough and take them on. So I guess it comes with a price, but for the organization, you have a really unique ability in that sense.
Thank you.
Yeah, but you do. I mean, that is their word everyone is talking about. So
yeah, that's true. It's a buzzword.
It is. But also makes sense. I mean, we need to be strong out there. We need to be to be able to look into the future and understand it, and strong enough to embrace it. It's maybe there is something in it, and you have it already. That's a big congratulations.
Thank you.
But how would you say a normal work day in Camilla's life would look like?
So either I wake up and make myself ready to go to the office, or I stay at home. We're very flexible to do home office, and so if I go to the office, I go by with my wheelchair, and I have something that is a mobility aid, I would say, that I can attach to my wheelchair, and then it's like it looks like a bit of an e-bike, an e-hand bike, and I cruise to my office without public transportation. I can go directly, and then I have a couple of meetings. I love to meet people in person, can welcome someone in our office. We have a lot of colleagues always that are in the office, so we have small coffee breaks, go out for lunch together. And I think the important thing that needs to be mentioned, why I prefer sometimes to stay in home office, because everything is just super accessible in my apartment for my needs. The ways are short. For example, in the office, if I want to go to the toilet, we have one accessible wheelchair toilet that's on the not on every floor, so I need to batch three times to actually get to the toilet, and need to take the lift, go down. So only to get from my desk to the toilet takes about 5 minutes, and then back 5 minutes as well. So I don't know, when I quickly need to go to the toilet, I'm away for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's time that I'm not working. So it's, for me, that's quite much easier back home. Also, we have a small canteen, just a room where we can have lunch. And when I started, there was a big step there, and a door that opened outside, so I could manage getting in there myself to warm up my food. And now they did change that once I started, because they realized that it's not accessible at all. And they changed it after like half a year after I started working there. But that's, for me, it's I feel a bit more relaxed when I'm in the home office than being in the office, just because of the infrastructure. And there are carpets in the office. Rolling on a carpet is quite hard. It always stops you when you're in a wheelchair. So it's a bit of training throughout the day that I have there. But after work, I like to do sports. I meet my friends, like to cook dinner. So it's pretty normal things, I would say.
And you go to Sicily next week for vacation. And you went to London a few weeks ago to work. So you're really an explorer, and it seems like you doesn't hinder yourself.
No,
that's to live the normal life.
Exactly. It's oftentimes not super accessible where I go. I was also in Panama earlier this year, and I knew there is not a lot of accessibility in Panama, but interestingly, it's not wheelchair friendly, but the people are super friendly. So it feels kind of that nothing is a problem, which is super nice.
And can you share some more hands-on examples on how you successfully overcome the obstacles related to your disability in your private life? And also in your professional, but I was thinking of Panama.
Yes. So I think I am very open, and I ask for help when I need it. There are certain things, obviously, that I can't do, like taking the stairs or getting into a boat where I need help. And then I really proactively approach people, because I also know that people like to help, but they are not sure if I want to be asked for help, if that's too much. That's a question I often get asked as well, like, should I offer help or not? Because when I see a situation, I think you might need help. And I say, look, for me personally, it's nice if you offer help. If I decline it, don't try to push your help on me. I will let you know once I need the help. So I think it's really the communication of what I need to people. And what I almost never do is that I really travel by myself. That would be difficult because, for example, if the toilet is too low and doesn't have any handbars to push yourself up, I would not get up from the toilet. Or if the bed is too low, if there are stairs with the suitcase, it's just, honestly, those are things I cannot do by myself. But if I go with friends there, it's pretty easygoing, or with family.
And what advice would you give to employers or colleagues or when you travel to create a more inclusive and accessible environment?
I think it's the ask, don't assume, meaning that ask people with disabilities, or ask me about my reality, of just instead of just assuming that you know, because oftentimes it's not that if there is a lift and no stairs that it's suitable for me. It's okay if you ask what I need to work well, to be comfortable, but it shouldn't mean, because there is right now in the UK, actually the UK government initiated a new campaign for disability inclusion that has the title Ask, Don't Assume. But it shouldn't mean, and that's a lot of, it's a big debate in the disabled community now, because it doesn't mean you should ask people about their medical condition just out of curiosity. So Ask, Don't Assume is more in a context when it's about the needs, the accommodation, how the infrastructure works well for me, and not assuming that you just know what's good for me there. But it shouldn't mean that you can approach me and say, hey, what happened?
Yeah.
Why are you in the wheelchair? It's none of your business. So,
But do you think different people with different disabilities have different mindset around this?
Yes.
Do you think there are many who does not like to have the question on how to get support or what do you see out there?
I think it's a very individual preference. I think when it comes to a work environment, there you need to have the conversation.
Mm.
Because it's also, I really do not expect my employer to know what how I work well, what I need in my environment to be the most creative or the most comfortable. So I need there, I think there it's, I would say for most of people with disabilities, they like to have the conversation and say what they need, if they need to have more time for rest or whatever. There I think the conversation is really needed. When it comes to the private side, like I said, I think it's nice if people ask me for help. Others that I know think, if they ask me for help, they assume that I need help, and they just see someone in a wheelchair and assume they need help. But so that's, I think, very individually how this is treated.
Yeah. And are there any like misconceptions or stereotypes about people with disabilities that you often encounter, or and how do you respond to them?
Yes. So what I oftentimes honestly experience is that if I'm out with family or friends and I'm the only one with a disability and sitting in my wheelchair, that they don't talk to me directly. So they ask my friends like, oh, does she want to sit on a chair? Or does or in the airplane, like, where does she sit? And then it's like, hey, I can talk. You can talk to me directly. So it's a bit of a, if you have a visible disability, I think a lot of times people don't know how to approach me, how to talk to me. Talk to me like you would talk to any person. And so oftentimes they associate like a mental disability or something with it, which my case is not the case. And that what I've experienced in work, in the work environment, when it comes to travel for business or business trips or hosting delegations, that some of my colleagues think very much in their way how they would do it. So they would go to a train or and they would do this and walk there. And then it's like, oh, it must be so hard. How can you do it? And it is exactly the thinking outside of the box. Start not to think that there is one way how to do something that leads to the goal, but there are a thousand ways. And I will do it my style. It's probably different how you do it, but we're also different person, different age, different gender, whatever. And that's a bit, I think, a lot of misconception or stereotypes exist there, that they also think it must be so hard. Maybe sometimes it is, but it's just different.
And how do you feel when you are, when someone is not talking to you? Because
it makes me very angry.
Oh,
it really makes me angry. And then also it brings out maybe not a really nice side of me. Then I feel like, do I need to tell you that I studied? I have a master's degree. And then it's like, why? It makes me feel quite small. Yeah, and not seen. But then I only realized that a couple of years ago when my dad actually feels like, she can talk. You can talk to her directly. And then they were like, oh yeah, sorry. So I think it doesn't come from a bad intention. It's just not knowing. But still,
I mean, it's also up to everyone to raise knowledge, to ask the questions. And
yeah, you cannot just always say it's not a bad intention.
But I wonder, Camilla, this makes me wonder a bit about the mental stress, because those emotions that it comes with being treated the way you not wish to be, do you feel any mental stress around it, and does it even, I mean, give you the unique challenges that you face?
Honestly,
in another way,
a little bit, definitely, because in my case, I would say the inclusion part was very good from early age on, I went to a regular school. All my friends were non-disabled, and I was kind of the one with the disability, but it didn't matter at all. And also with my family, I loved them, and they did a very great job making it, normal. Because, but I don't like the word normal, actually.
Nah, I agree. I agree. What's normal?
But nothing
Who's
else
normal?
Can do about it. Exactly. And now what really helps me, I started to establish more my contacts within the disabled community. I have very close friends now that have disabilities too, because I realized that I missed that a little bit, to have people that share the exact same experiences. Because my friends, they do understand, but they haven't had moments like this as I do, with challenges, with comments that you get, a bit discrimination. And now that I can talk to people with disabilities as well and realize, like, oh, you have actually the same reality I do. And it just feels good, because sometimes I felt quite lonely or quite alone with my reality. And that helps me a lot. But I also started a couple of years ago to talk to a psychologist every month, because I realized these are things, situations that trigger me, and I want to learn how to better deal with them. So it's okay if they get to me, but I want to learn how to better, cope with them, let's say. Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
You mentioned that it's extremely important to talk to people with disabilities instead of talking only about them and assuming the things. But are there any advocacy groups or organizations that you're involved with to support people with disabilities? I mean, I know you are a role model and pushing those topics, so it's a leading question.
Yes, there are a lot of organizations, and I'm part of a couple of them, not too active in all of them. But for example, there is one in Switzerland. It's called Avanti Donne. It's for women with disabilities, because there you kind of face two discriminations at the same time. And they work politically, they raise awareness. So I'm part of that organization, but also I'm in the, it's called the Wheelchair Club of the Canton of Zurich. And they have a lot of different things, but basically it's a lot of people with disabilities from the Canton of Zurich in Switzerland. They go there, and they also offer a wide program of different sports activities. Mm. So that's very cool, because, for example, I can do wheelchair Pilates there. And where else would you find that?
Yeah.
So that's quite nice.
And also, do you have any situation where you advocated for disability rights or accessibility improvements in the community? And I'm also curious about how does the government support, or the canton of Zurich, as you described, but what does the government do to support people with disabilities?
So actually this year, it's been like half a year ago, was the first ever disability rights session in the National Parliament. And I was part of it. So I was elected to be a parliamentarian in this session. And they wanted to have, because 22% of the people in Switzerland have a visible or invisible disability. So every fifth person actually has a disability. And they wanted to have 22% of the parliament, which are 44 people with disabilities in this session, to actually not talk about them, but with them, so that we with the disabilities get the voice, can raise topics. And I was in this session there, and for me it was super powerful, because in a lot of situations I am often the only one with a disability. And there we were in the room, 44 people, all very active, fighting for the same cause. And it felt, for me, it really felt so powerful. Like, we're a lot, we are seen, we have something to say. So for me, this was really overwhelming. And out of this also, more initiatives formed. We're still in contact. Now there is an inclusion initiative in Switzerland, and also a couple of the parliamentarians from this session now want to be elected to actually go long term to the parliament to have the representation there. And for me, that's a big step, and I really hope to see a lot of them getting elected.
Oh, you are amazing. You really are, Camilla. Can you provide insights on how people without disabilities can be better allies and advocates from the disabled community?
I think we all already touched upon that. So educate yourself.
Yeah.
There is Google. Google knows a lot. Mm-hmm. Start with Google.
Mm-hmm.
There are many good books. There are starting to be podcasts. I also started my own podcast this year. It's still in Swiss German because I want to start raising awareness in my surroundings, what I know, and have conversations with people with other disabilities as well, to show different realities. So my goal then would be that if people read books or listen to my podcast, that they would, if they start a new project or event, that they ask themselves like, hey, how would Camilla do that? And that would be for me the ideal. And that's also a good way how to be an ally, to just go a bit out of your abilities of how you would do it and think about how other people that you may know that have other abilities do it. And then I think that's the way to go. And it's also, it's okay if you don't know some things. Like I had a very interesting moment as well when I wrote my master's thesis. I wrote it about digitization and accessibility for blind people. And I was a bit arrogantly thinking that I'm an expert when it comes to accessibility in general. And then I had interviews with a lot of people with visual impairment and blind people. And I realized like, wow, Camilla, you haven't thought about your whole life how a blind person goes grocery shopping, a very basic need. And for me, this was the moment like, okay, wow, wait a minute. I've only thought in my garden of ramps, toilets, lifts. But for someone that is visually impaired, the reality is a lot different. So that broadened my horizon a lot and opened it to other realities as well. And I think, it's a process. You can always learn something new.
And you will find, we will put the link to your podcast when we publish this this interview too. So for you who speak Swiss German, we'll have access to it.
Perfect.
But in your opinion, what should societies and organizations do to promote greater inclusion? What do you say?
I would say to give people with disabilities the chance, or to have a more platform for them. Because if you're flexible when it comes to your working environment, and you stop to assume that you know how other people work most efficiently, then you can open up a whole new pool of talents. And it's so individual, the needs, how you thrive. And I think it's also a bit, if you reduce, for example, barriers to infrastructure, this would allow people with disabilities, with physical disabilities, to even apply for your job. Because honestly, if I apply for a job somewhere, what I always check before, where is the building? I go on Google Maps to the street view, have a look at the building, try to see. Because I know, for example, Zurich, I know there are areas, just old buildings, so I would not apply for a job there because there are only stairs. And I think it's also this reciprocity that people don't apply to jobs because there are barriers. And then from an employer's perspective, it looks like, oh yeah, well, no one with a disability is interested in, but it's a bit the other way around that there are barriers why I don't apply. So I think just to be more open and think about the unique talents you could have if you open up your platform a bit, yeah.
And it's everyone's responsible, right?
Yes.
To act and behave more inclusive.
Yes.
But I have one question, because we started a program a couple of years ago that we called CEOs for Diversity and Inclusion. And I will meet our third group next week. So what would you pass on to CEOs in large global companies, like a number one action or idea that you wish them to take on acting more inclusive?
So I think the thought or the action of inclusion is part of the DNA of a company. Mm-hmm. And it's not enough if bottom-up initiatives come, but it should come from the top down, from the management. So it's something that is part of the culture that you can actively do, that you can actively take in your project requirements. When you start a project, if you from the beginning onwards think with the idea of, hey, how can I make it digitally accessible so that someone with a screen reader who is visually impaired can use it as well, then it doesn't cost more time, it doesn't cost more money, it's not limited to design. And the same for events. If you think about the ramp from beforehand, or to have not only high tables at the networking apero, but also lower ones for people who are sitting. So if you have it on the agenda from the beginning onwards, then you can really make a change. And then it doesn't cost more time and money. And that's something, from my point of view, should come from top down, from the management. Yeah,
perfect. Thank you so much. And I will let them listen to your interview. So
thank you.
It will definitely reach through. And great. Is there anything else that you would like to pass on to the world through this interview that you think is important or that we missed in this conversation to highlight while you have the chance?
I honestly think everyone should be concerned and interested for the topic of accessibility, because it's something, a disability can happen throughout life. So maybe at one point you're not part of the disabled community, but at the next moment you might be. So it concerns all of us. And I think if you think about it from early onwards, if you are actively involved, be an ally, that will help so many people. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Camilla. And you are a true role model, and keep shining and inspire more to do more. We need leaders like you to make this world a better place. Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much, Sophia. It was my pleasure.
Thank you. And for all of you who are curious and want to find more inspiration on the D&I and how it takes place in our top management groups, you can find more interviews in this podcast with cool, amazing leaders like Camilla, who stand up for diversity and inclusion, and even when no one sees. So we wish you all a lovely day, and keep up the fire out there. Ciao.